Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Whoa.
Who's we have another voice in
just
the house.
A mystery guest.
Did I didn't even get prompted to jump in. That permission to
no,
just
it's great. It's great.
Okay. Let's get started.
Hello.
So we have a really special episode today. We have Nixon Ma in the house.
Nixon Ma.
Hello. Hello. How do you? Oh my God. Okay.
We should let him introduce himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you do the whole
let's start and then the ba-dum, bam, bam, ti-dum, boom music?
I think maybe that'll be right now.
Okay, right now? Here we go. Set, go. Ba-dum, bam, bam, ti-dum. That sounded like McDonald's.
It did sound
good. I'm loving it. Nixon.
Hello.
Nixon, tell us a little bit about yourself. Help us get to know you, because, you know, I know you think everyone knows you, but not everyone knows you, okay?
Not true.
Yeah, we have a lot of new members, so.
Where do I even start, though?
It's either that, or I send them to the YouTube link where we...
Oh, my gosh. Please do not. Please do not.
Archives?
We don't have a Faces of Echo.
That's right.
Pre-marriage.
On YouTube.
Pre-baby Nixon. No, you guys got to watch that. And make sure you stay to the end when he looks up at the camera.
Oh, God, I love you, PB, but I hate you like, so boom. Much. Now it's out there.
It's out there.
And I just...
You know what? I'm going to link it to this podcast.
No. It's going to come back to James because he put me in this position
where I have to live with the shame. That focus that he does at the end where he looks up at the camera.
Oh, God.
I'm like, this is the best way to end every service.
We should do that.
I should always have my head down. Oh, benediction music.
Thank
hits.
You, James, for
the
that.
The camera goes right into my face and I go, and may God bless.
It's so bad.
And may God bless.
PB just looked up.
Yeah.
Oh, so slowly.
Yeah. I can't do it like Nixon,
it?
But no anyway, way, so no Nixon, who are you? Talk to us. Like tell us said. About your journey, like maybe even like the 2011-12, how you got here.
Okay.
Let's do that whole journey.
Then I need to shout out my wife then, because the way that ended up at Echo was we were dating law school.
You were dating law school?
Dating law school.
In law school, yes.
In law school.
Yes.
And I don't know how it came to be, but I think at that time she was also not at a church.
Mm.
My family is Buddhist. I didn't grow up Christian. I didn't have any exposure to that at all whatsoever. But
wow.
Yeah, you know, we would go on these dates and a lot of it was like so corny, but like picnics at like the park and stuff, right? At sunset at dusk. It's very romantic.
That's not corny. Wait, but can I ask you who set it up? Did she set it up or did
you?
Oh,
it was me.
It was me.
Yeah, with the blankets and the wine glasses.
Learn,
and all
kids,
that.
Learn.
So we would do it and like we would have like all these conversations and I think one day we were talking about faith because I think she was starting to feel like a call back. And for some reason with her, I felt safe having that conversation about like what we believe in, what I believe in. And
wow.
And so, you know, you remember me back in the day too. Like I had such
I try
very,
to forget that time of my life.
Me too.
Okay. I remember.
But I had very basic questions. Like, you know, she's a PK, so I assume she had all the answers, right? So stuff like, you know, what about those kids who grew up, you know, in Africa who never are exposed? Are they just condemned? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like who is God? Like, what about my parents who live like my mom, who's so sacrificial, who lives her life so for other people? Like, is she going to, you know,
real,
be saved?
Real questions.
Those are heavy hitting.
Yeah. But
poor
it all,
Kelly.
I don't.
Like, I don't
Kelly's
know.
Kelly's like, can't we just watch a movie?
And she was like, I have all the answers.
Uh-huh,
just
uh-huh.
Listen. No, she was very like honest about it. She was just like, you know, that she doesn't have those answers, but if you're willing to come to church, like you might, you know, find those answers for yourself. So at one point, she got me to come out. Oh my gosh, I was so nervous. I remember that day I thought that I had to wear like a button up shirt and like a tie and stuff. She's like, no, it's Echo Church. Like,
wow.
We wear
wow.
jeans and you know, so I go.
She said, once you see my pastor, you'll know. You don't
this
need
is
to,
not a button
know,
up.
You know,
shirt.
You don't need to clean up for church.
And so I remember like very clearly we were at Praise Chapel.
Yes.
We were front and center.
The building next to the Fullerton Airport. Yeah. Yes.
And the railroad.
Yep. Yes.
Front and center. I remember I got in, okay. Lights dimmed, people started raising their hands, singing, and I was like, what did I get myself into? Because I have no background, so worship to me is super weird. Right, yeah. So I was like super nervous. I was like, what do I do? Do I raise my hands too? I got through that, and then PB gave him your message. I remember it. It was like something along the lines of like don't let... You know, Christians in the past, like, kind of influence your perspective on God. And, you know, like, if you've been hurt before, right? And to me, that was very personal. Because me growing up in high school, being, like, the non-Korean guy, the non-Christian Korean guy.
Were you surrounded by Korean Christians?
I was.
Okay.
I was.
I'm so sorry about that. Okay. Keep going.
I always felt, like, judged. Or I always felt like... you know, this pressure to this very judgmental, like, oh, that guy's like a heathen.
Like, you don't measure up to.
I don't measure up. And so I was never included in like the inside jokes, or I was never like, it was never, it was always, I always felt like an outsider. In my high school, there was a lot of like Korean Americans. I mean, retrospect, now I look at it, like, I don't blame them. I think they were also trying to do their best to evangelize and expose.
And they're insecure too.
And they were such like these, like, you know, everything for Christ type of
people. Oh, yikes.
Yeah.
But that message, man, hit me. Because I left thinking like, oh, dude, like, God spoke directly to me. At least that, for me, that first day was like very clear.
Wow.
Because my reservation going that day was, I'm not supposed to be here.
Wow.
And so, like, that's how it started. And I got super, I think after that, I don't know if Kelly had been talking to you, because she had been coming out for a few months, but it's either that day or like the week after, like, you came up and you introduced yourself. And then...
To you.
To me. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I think we had like a brief conversation, and I asked you those very tough questions, right off the bat. I was like, oh, Pastor, I'm going to quiz you, right?
Oh, wow. Well, you're probably the guy... In my journals, you're probably the guy that I wrote, like, who to avoid this month. Yeah.
No.
So you asked me tough questions.
I asked you tough questions, but, man, like, we have such a good pastor. Like, you didn't pretend like you had all of it either. Wow. No, in the best way. No. Because for me, it was like, I was like, okay, like, he's willing to have that discussion and kind of journey in just like, you know, figuring out those answers. Mm-hmm. And then the following week, I think he gave me like a few books.
Oh.
What is Buddhism and like what is Christianity? And like, I just ingested it. I remember being super hungry to figure out.
Man, I was a nice pastor in the past.
You're very nice pastor.
You're still like that,
PB. I thought about people.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think about any of you. So go ahead. So you read up on that.
Yeah. And the big takeaway for me was that I was harping too much on like the gritty, nitty gritty details, but the overarching picture, you know, was what was most important.
Yeah.
Right. And definitely I felt like this, like, I don't know, like, oh, I feel like this is where I need to invest my time.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, Heidi, but that's, for me, that takes so much courage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just a leap of faith. It's not just like, oh, I'm going to trust in this God or respond to the Spirit. It's like a new culture.
Yeah.
And then it was a culture that once hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very powerful story, Nixon.
I know.
I didn't realize that was so impressive.
Yeah.
I have so many questions, but I'm like, oh, I'm so curious.
No, that's
so
great.
So when you were entering into this new faith, like, what did, I don't know if this is like too meta of a question, but like, what did God feel like to you? Like, did you have an understanding, or did you just kind of feel like a resonance in your spirit, or?
Oh, man.
What a great question.
To be completely honest, I felt like the fuzzies, like during my first, you know, few years where, you know, after a message, I would get that like, the fuzzies, like, is that a thing? You feel like this like warmth, right? Yeah. I don't even know what to call it. So
it's the fuzzies.
Yeah, it's the fuzzies. So,
can you get closer?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I just whispered that into my mic.
You were trying to be so incognito, but you're like this, can you get
close to the mic. And I'm like, Heidi, we can hear everything you're saying.
Okay.
Yeah, so. So you felt the fuzzies.
If that is a thing, then it yes, is it thing. Is. It is a thing. Yeah. So I remember being very like enthusiastic about it, very excited about it. And God being real to me didn't occur until I think years later after the infamous, you know.
We don't have to go there. We don't have to go there.
It was BB's fault.
Oh, wow.
But it was, you know, anyway.
Dang. We'll
reserve that for part two. But anyway, in the beginning, it was part very like this thirst.
How
like
leaders hurt me.
But in the beginning, it felt like an invitation. I did feel invited. That was the thing. And I don't know if it's a combination of, you know, Echo being so warm and hospitable and open. You know, it probably is that combination of that and God really extending his hand during that season. Because I think I wouldn't have been ready for that either if at any other point in my life. So it was a lot of like things that had to make sense. Like I had someone to go with.
Yeah.
Like my wife made me feel, you know, she introduced me to everybody. Yeah. She made me feel like welcomed, and she helped ease me into the transition. And then I had people just kind of looking out for me. Like, you know, I started going to Ecclesia right off the bat. They were all like, so like, who is this guy? Like, why is he here? You know, but they were so like, let's get him.
Him in love. Yeah.
You're like, Kelly, why am I the only one getting prayed for every night?
I was like, that's normal, right? Yeah, like everyone normal, just gets mad prayed for like hours at a time. Like they saw.
Yeah.
So it was that. So the feeling invited, feeling welcomed, and then you know, going through orthopraxis, it's like all this information, you know, and I felt at that time like I had to catch up.
No, I remember when, Nixon, do you remember the time when I asked if you were ready to like verbally and prayerfully commit to the Lord?
Yeah, March 8th, 2012.
Damn.
No way.
Yeah. Tell us about that. I literally remember. Because you seem to remember better than me.
It was right before, I think I met at your office for some random reason.
It was
right
the office down the street from here.
Yeah, before an ortho class.
Oh, okay.
And we had like, we had a conversation. At the end of that conversation, you said, like, are you ready to kind of verbally give your life to God? And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready. Yeah.
You know what I love about, because I remember that moment. I don't remember the date like you do.
I'm a sentimental person.
You are. But I remember sitting there, and he was right in front of me. It was the old office where when I come off my table, I can sit right in front of the people that visit. And he was right in front. And I remember as we're talking, I can sense the Holy Spirit direct me and say, it's time to pray with him. And the word I kept getting was, it's time. It's time. Tell him it's time. And so I'm like, do you think he'll know what I'm talking about? So I just straight up said, hey, I don't know if you remember this, but I looked at you and I said, hey, Nixon, it's time.
Oh, my gosh.
I said something like that. I said, I think it's time. And that's all I said.
Yeah.
And you were like, it's time.
Wow, so you knew.
You knew.
I knew.
Because I know for a fact I didn't describe what time it was. I didn't talk about the sinner's prayer or anything like that. I just said, it's time. And you're like, yeah, it's time.
To be honest, I thought I had already... I didn't know there was like a moment that you needed to you know, proclaim. I thought I was already in on the team. You know?
That's the beauty of the story. I'm part of the team, right?
He was and is. And the beauty of the story is that like when I was growing up, you had to become before you belonged. And what I love about Nixon's story and journey with us is that he belonged way before he had publicly become a Christian. Does this make sense? And so he felt the embrace of God. He felt included. He felt the father heart of God for him. And then by the time it was to get baptized and publicly declare, he had already been in. Does that make sense? And I feel like that's the way, let me say it this way. It's, you know, the scripture says it's his kindness that leads us to repentance. If I can rephrase it for this context, I would say, it's the Lord's hospitality. It's his hospitality that leads us to become sons and daughters.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not It's not he's hospitable because we're sons and daughters.
Yeah. Mm.
He is first loving. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, oh my God, you are my God. Mm-hmm. That's what I love about your story. It's really the journey of one who is hospitable himself, because Nixon's very hospitable. And it's also the journey of being hosted mm-hmm. by Kelly, his girlfriend at the time, right?
Oh, wow, yeah.
Hosted by the church who love him, right? Hosted by the Lord, mm-hmm. you know? Now, some people regret hosting him, but... But we all love him. We're all glad he's here.
Man.
You know what I mean?
That's
this
a great.
This is how PB does things. Yeah. He lifts you up and then he crushes you.
Yeah. That's how I keep my job, guys. It's like a surgeon leaving something undone.
So you can go back.
You have to come back. So I do that. I make sure I wound him so I can heal them.
No, that's a great way to put it then. Yeah. I definitely felt the hospitality during those early years. It just felt like home. I mean, as corny as that may sound, like Echo's been my one and only church. And I hope it stays that way. But like, I've never had to question like, you know.
And what I love about his journey, Heidi, is like, I love that you say it's your one and only church, and it's like your one and only church family. Mm-hmm. But Nixon, it wasn't always rosy here.
Yeah.
It was, you know, from relationships to church relationships to even his relationship with his, back then, his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Nothing about this journey was perfect, you know? But like a family, he stayed put. Like a family, he not only responded to the hosting, but eventually became a host himself.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
Yeah.
Perfectly imperfect.
Yes.
You know, my experience, and looking back on it, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Mm.
There's a lot that was learned throughout all those seasons, and that's why I think that I feel extra ownership over our church.
Yeah.
Like why, you know, when people do hit walls and stuff, like I'm like there's a silver lining here. Like trust me, there's going to be something on the other side. Mm. So,
but isn't that like all relationships? Like even with romantic relationships, like you finally get over the honeymoon. Mm-hmm. And then there's that breaking point mm-hmm. where you decide, is this going to be love?
Yeah.
Or is this going to be lust or whatever you want to call it, right? Romantic, just romantic love. Are we going to go into friendship?
Yeah.
Are we going to go into deep levels of communion together? And that requires butting heads. Mm-hmm. That requires dry seasons, mundane moments. And I think that's what we're really lacking.
Yeah.
You know, and I love that and I'm really like proud of you, Nixon, and I'm kind of bragging about you right now, but I brought him here, Heidi. I really wanted him to be our guest because we're in the season of being hospitable.
Mm-hmm.
What the Jews will call the Festival of Tabernacles.
That's right, yeah.
It's when the Lord hosted or shelter the people of God in the wilderness mm-hmm. During the Exodus, after the delivery from Egypt. And they have this festival where they celebrate God not only took us out of slavery, and he not only brought us to the promised land, but he sheltered us in between in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're celebrating. And one of the things that the way they celebrate is as they pitch tents, right, and have these feasts, they bring others into their tent.
Mm-hmm.
And others get to enjoy the provision, right, and the shelter of God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why in this season, in the fall season, we not only have our anniversary, which is God sheltered us all these years, right, mm-hmm. in our great exodus, right, from sin, but he gives us the commission and the challenge to do the same for others, especially those that have no homes, that are shelterless. And so I was like thinking, Heidi, like, you know, when we were planning for this, I was like, who is the perfect person to bring, right? Mm-hmm. To talk about the spirit of hospitality.
Yeah.
The spirit of the welcoming spirit of God.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't get my number one choice.
Who is that?
So what I did was I went down the list and I got my number four.
Spoiler alert.
And so
sorry.
Those couldn't come. So I brought Nixon.
He's trying to keep you humble. You were his number one choice.
should have been Kelly.
It should have been Kelly.
Yeah. That's right. Actually, you were number two.
Probably number two. Yeah.
But I think what I do love about your story is that you guys are like physically hospitable. You know, we see on social media, you guys hosting people in our church, and you guys are wonderful safe family hosts as well. So you guys create this like beautiful, safe, warm, tangible home. Mm. But I think even your spiritually and like your presence, you guys have such a hospitable spirit.
Oh my gosh.
And like, you know, even what you were saying earlier about like when people hit walls and like, it's just the mess of being in a family. I think giving people the benefit of the doubt in hard seasons is also part of being hospitable. There's a saying, I think PB, you said it once, and it's kind of, I forget, it's kind of crude, but you're like, when the barn is full, it's full of shit.
Yeah, it's full of shit.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that.
Well, scripture says that, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's my adaptation of scripture, but I think it's in Proverbs where it says like, if the barn is empty, it's clean.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it's full of animals, or another way of saying it is when it's full of life.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's messy.
It's messy.
Dang, I like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So what do you want? You want life or you want death? Death is super clean.
It's clean and it's
right?
pristine.
It's totally controlled.
You can control it. Yeah.
But life is messy.
Yeah. And I think the way that you guys live, even in your friendships and with membership at this church, there's always going to be mess. And I think the way that you guys are, you know, positioning yourself, posturing yourself is like, yeah, there's mess, but that's part of being a family. And that's part of inviting people into your house. They're not going to do the dishes the way you like them to. They're not going to make the bed. They're going to leave their stuff around. But that's part of opening up the soft, fleshy parts of your home.
When did you know that you were hospitable? Was it after you got a house? Was it the first apartment you got down the street from us? Or did you always feel like you were? Because even in their dating season, if you hear their story about those picnics, in a sense, it was a hospitable date.
That's very true. Yeah.
Because I don't remember ever doing a picnic for Michelle. I think I just said, hey, I ain't cooking nothing. We got to go to a restaurant. You don't want to taste anything that I cook. But this man be preparing stuff.
Yeah. No, I think I've always, I didn't know exactly what that was in me, but I think even back as early as I can remember, like I, you know, I think my mom ingrained it in me.
Wow.
Like we would go to like random like aunties or like uncles' houses, and like 7-year-old me after dinner would be washing the dishes afterwards and stuff. It's just something like that. I think my mom's always like done a really good job at like, you know, setting the table and like having people come, and she's like overextending to just make people feel comfortable, right? So I don't know, like
she played the host even when she was not the host.
Yeah.
She wanted to make sure everyone felt comfortable.
Yes, yes. Wow. And I think Kel's is very similar in that regard too. But I'm entering, I feel like, this period of my life where I'm like I was kind of alluding to before, where I'm kind of like trying to figure out who I am and being okay with who I am. And part of that is like discovering like, man, people keep telling me that I'm like hospitable. It's not like something that I like wore as like a I didn't realize that, but I've been getting a lot of like people like reminding me of that, and it's making me feel like, oh, this is who I am.
Wow.
I think this is who I am.
Yeah.
And so I think moving to Corona, out of state.
For those of you listening, you guys can look up Corona.
It's not that far.
Especially those in Asia that are listening. Corona is kind of like, it's like Hong Kong, and then you have to drive to China.
No.
Okay, so go ahead.
But anyway, the season that we decided to move out there, it was all for like very pragmatic reasons, right? Like, you know, we just had a kid. You know, we wanted the extra space, the schools, or whatever. So like pragmatically, it was like the perfect choice for us at the time. And then in retrospect, looking back on the last like 2 or 3 years, I think we really discovered our love for hosting there. We were away from everyone. It wasn't like a quick 15. It wasn't convenient now to hang out with everybody. So we would invite people.
Interesting.
And when we would invite people, we just felt like, dude, like, I don't know why, like, we would like prepare menus. Like we would press the we would like press the sheets, make little gift bags. We would treat it like an Airbnb, like a bed and breakfast.
Wow.
And I don't know why that got us so excited, but just over the course of the last few years, like it just became very routine. Like we, yeah. me and Kel joke, like we have our set menus. Like on the day, on a weekend where she's not feeling it, I have my go-tos. On a weekend I'm not feeling it, she has her go-tos. Wow. You know,
you mean for menu
for food, for meals for the weekend,
for or hanging like out with people.
Yeah, or like even when it comes to like like the chores around the house, like we don't even have to say anything. Like we already just, we just go, like, and she'll just go and do her thing. I go do her thing. We have it all set up. Like it's got like to that point.
Bed and breakfast.
It is. Yeah.
Hanneman, shout out to Hanneman. She's so funny. She's just the queen of puns at our church, where she calls us the Marriott. The Marriott. But anyway, like I'm starting to take like pride in that. Like we feel, just
so what's the joy?
The joy is
why is it so life-giving?
Because
that's a good question.
Because we love feeling that our guests feel rested.
Mm.
Like period. Like we're so exhausted sometimes afterwards, but kind of like once we kind of go into the safe family stuff, but the feeling is like, oh, they feel rested. So even if they had a bunch of kids, they had, you know, the drive, whatever, their work week, when they come, we just do everything. Mm-hmm. Just kick your feet up, hang out. Wow. Like we'll bring you, you know, whatever. Like we'll cook.
There's gonna be a list of Echo people that are like,
can I come over? Is this invite only? How do I get?
No. Yeah. And so I think that's the thing.
You have my permission to say a fat no to everyone, okay? Yeah.
It also makes sense because now that I know my Enneagram.
Oh,
like that is of course.
Yes.
Like I just want to be loved. Love me. Yeah. Like I was kidding.
You get something out of it too. You're saying.
Yeah. Like yeah. I think the act of service for me, like brings me a lot of joy.
Of course.
Like you know, to just be of use, be of service. Yeah. You know, and so, I think it was very clear in the last few years since we've been out there and being very intentional about. Mm. Getting together with people, or when we want to get to know people, inviting them over and kind of treating them to a night. It's not that.
So it's not just like close friends at our church. It's people that you want to get to know.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So give us a typical like Marriott experience. So when you get there, it's like what, 5 to 6 o'clock? You know that we've traveled 5 hours to get to your house. Right?
Like 40 minutes.
Yeah, so yeah, I feel like I need to make it like a requirement for people coming out to get a fast track. It's a transponder. It gets you access to the 91 Express loop freeways. Yeah. It's not a monthly like reoccurring charge. You can just have it, you know, and it'll just replenish when you use it. You use as you go. But anyway, it saves a lot of time. So please, when you come visit, please just have one of those equipped in your car.
What just happened? How did this
California Highway?
No, so when you have your outro, like your little intermissions and stuff, there should be like a whole like.
Yeah,
there you go. Put your fast track.
This segment has been brought to you by
Fast Track. No, but okay. So normally I'll text them beforehand. I do a quick Waze check to see what the traffic looks like. I honestly do because I get so stressed out about it. No, because people give, you know, there's too many jokes. Right? I want to narrow it down. I kind of want to make it as simple as possible. Yeah. So I'll let you know, like, best time to leave is between this window. If not, don't do it.
So they get a text or something saying, take this route or leave around this time.
You know, sometimes it'll be a joke. Like, you know, your check-in time is 3 p.m. today. Okay. You want to make it here in 35 minutes and you got to leave at 1:23, you know, or whatever.
I love this.
You know, so like, I don't know. So like, they'll get there, you know, I'll help the bags in. I'm the bellboy. Come on. Like, they just come. Then we hang out and then, you know, we serve dinner. If they have kids, after we put the kids down, we'll either, you know, head to the backyard. We'll have, you know, food and snacks and we'll just hang out and we'll just talk.
And from what I hear, it's not just a backyard.
Mm-hmm. I hear it's like a bonanza.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Who is telling you these lies?
Yes. We're seeing it on social media.
We see it in the pictures, man.
It's this astral turf. Yeah. And,
Joanna Gaines walk by and get inspiration.
And she nods with approval.
She nods with approval. Good job, my friends.
Good job.
Wow.
Those of you who don't know who Joanna Gaines is, you just don't listen anymore. Just don't listen to this one.
You just go to Target.
Yeah. That's so hostile.
Yeah. Sorry. That's the opposite of hospitality.
I want to pause here because you guys are both, you work full time.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
And it's not just like, it's not just like, you know, easy peasy, like career. You guys are both attorneys and you have two young children.
That's right.
Tell you're making it sound.
Older day.
And you're not doing like takeaway food.
Yeah,
you're like,
yeah.
I think the last thing I saw on social media was like a 5-hour braised like meat dish or something so that I've never made in my
it's
life.
Not DoorDash.
It's not DoorDash. It's actual.
It's a Ma-Dash.
It was David Chang's pork. It was the Posam, his recipe.
Wow.
How dare you?
Yeah.
Okay.
My wife made that, by the way.
Okay.
It's very delicious.
So your kids are how old?
So Kaylin just turned 4. Connor is 18 months.
Yeah. My goodness. So tell us. So what are you saying about that?
I'm saying it's so, like, you would think, you know, if you don't know Nixon and you're listening to this, you're like, well, maybe they're just young, energetic people who just have time on their hands. But, like, I wanted to pause here and be like, no, actually, like, it takes a lot of effort and intentionality, and it's inconvenient to do this. And yet they put, like, 110% into everything, into all the details.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't think we even think about it that way. It's just something that we love to do. So, you know, when you love to do something, it doesn't feel like work or inconvenience at all. But I don't know. Now that
so do you lock up your kids in a closet while you get ready? Or I have four kids. And for us to get... when people come over our house when we're hosting... you know, we'll say like, oh man, it took us, you know, like Michelle and I will be like, oh, it took us so long to get ready, right? And then people will come over and go, okay, like, they'll look at it like, wow, you guys really didn't get ready for us to come over. And I'm thinking, you bastard. Do you know how long it took for us to get the house even this clean? Like, I have to lock up the kids somewhere if I'm going to do this, man, you know?
Oh, I mean, the kids, I feel like, are used to it now.
Oh, wow. Thanks, Nixon.
No, oh, my gosh. Like I said, I think we've really, like, since having our own home and kind of through trial and error and through just, you know, hosting enough times, like, we have our rhythms. Mm. And so it doesn't feel like...
The purchase of the home, the idea of hosting... Was that part of the criteria for finding this home?
Part of it, yeah.
Because you guys love hosting.
To have an extra room. Like, so our whole thing is we always want one extra, like, a guest room. Just
wow.
Oh, so it's not an office. It's like you made it into an actual guest room.
It's a guest room. I mean, it's a room. Yeah. So we have a front, you know, we have an office space.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, we keep that room
designated for guests.
Yeah.
Mm. Wow. Mm. That almost sounds like a tithe of your time.
Oh,
like
of your
resources. Dang, you're making it sound way better than it is. I just like the look of having a spare guest room.
But that's her job.
Oh my gosh, how do you like?
She makes things sound better too.
Oh my gosh.
Right, all right.
Yeah.
But that kind of reminds me of when the sons were preparing to adopt. I think I remember them saying they also purchased a home specifically with the dream in mind. Ooh. And I feel like sometimes we do the opposite. We're like, oh, maybe we'll eventually get to that dream and then it kind of fizzles out. But the fact that you had that specific desire and you set aside that time and you intentionally, like you bought a house with that in mind, I feel like it's not like, oh, you bought an extra like coffee
futon.
Yeah. But it's like
a great point.
It's a big purchase. It's a big thing.
It's very intentional.
Yeah, it's very intentional.
Which is one of our values, guys. Whose values is intentionality.
Intentionality.
The way you express love is by being intentional about things.
Echo Church responds with intentionality.
Intentionality.
Because God deserves
Look
a
at the
loving
values.
Church. Is that
right?
Loving.
I think so,
yeah.
Yes.
Like, I'm still like processing. What are you saying? Like, I'm like, man, she's like rocking me right now. When you frame it that way.
What about it? What do you mean?
No, it's just, I feel like I'm at the point in my life where the last 10, 15 years is finally starting to make sense. Mm. Like it's all kind of coming together. Mm. And, you know, I re-listened to the podcast with Pastor Moses, right? Mm-hmm. Just the other night. And his whole thing was just being like faithful to the little things along the way. And then you even said something about like, oh, like so many of us just want God to just drop the thing on our lap. Like this is your thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, the thing like is when you put it that way, I'm like, even before I even realized like this is kind of like in our tool belt, like what we can do to be of service to people or to love on people. Like I didn't realize like that was, it's kind of been like in the works, I guess.
People, I think in modern day Christianity, at least in the West, we don't really equate hospitality with spirituality.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's funny how hospitality is now something owned by an industry.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really the tool belt. It's really in the tool belt of the church.
Yeah.
Like in the early church, you know, Heidi and Dixon, like in the early church, the one thing that every church and every early fathers agreed on was that hospitality is a Christian virtue.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
They couldn't agree on doctrine, many of them. They had all sorts of battles, you know, in doctrine and how to run the church, how to be the church.
Mm-hmm.
But they say, historians say there's one thing that every sect of Christianity agreed on was that hospitality is a Christian marker. It's a Christian virtue. Much so that it was above and valued above sexual purity.
Mm.
Isn't that crazy? That we live in a time where we're like, we measure Christian spirituality with like,
based how, on like your
yeah, are you not doing it? Are you not being fornicating? Are you not lusting? Are you not? Back then, if you weren't hosting and you weren't hospitable, you were basically a very immature Christian or not a Christian at all. Isn't that crazy how
that is crazy.
We twisted this, right? And just to like, you know, just to think about this for a second, the spirituality of hospitality, guys, like you think about the world we live in, you know, like the planet that we live in, the fact that this is the only inhabitable world or planet
that we know of.
Stop, you're ruining my flow. Yeah. I'm trying to make a point here that out of all the billions of galaxies,
it's so true. Yeah, continue.
Supposedly, now I have to say supposedly this is the only inhabitable planet, meaning what I was trying to say before you ruin my flow is that God is hosting us.
Yeah.
Mm. Whatever.
That's so true. And then we have the technology to see like all the different galaxies, and it's almost like he just like created all these planets, and it's like just this one.
Just this one. And then he made it so habitable.
Yeah. Mm.
Right? Like everywhere else we go, like Elon Musk, I love him. I think he's inspirational, but he wants to go to Mars. I'm like, brother, you can go to Mars. Because everything has to be manufactured there, right? Air has to be made, right? Yeah. The planet has to be made habitable. This is a gift from God.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. I think every human being needs to go to New Zealand once.
No,
I'm serious. When we went to New Zealand during sabbatical, and we came out of the airplane and we went to Middle Earth, right?
Like legit
Middle Earth.
Yeah.
I remember standing there in many of these mountain areas and nature areas and lakes and stuff, untouched, okay? Mm-hmm. So clean, so pristine. And I remember thinking, this is a gift from God.
Mm.
God inhabits this.
Yeah.
God is with us, right?
Yeah.
Every other planet, we have to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you just think about the spirituality of hospitality.
Yeah.
How in the beginning, Let's say it this way. This is good. This is deep. In the beginning, God hosted.
Mm.
Woo! Come on, somebody.
Right.
That's a sermon, Heidi. Yeah.
That is a sermon.
In the beginning, God created what? Created a table. He set a table for us for creation.
And he created humans last.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he made the space first. Yeah.
Wow. We are the guest. We are the... He. And then the Bible ends with a party.
Yeah.
Where he's hosting the wedding feast, the supper of the lamb, right?
Yeah.
The great supper of the lamb, the wedding supper of the lamb.
Mm-hmm.
It ends with another hosting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wow. So our God is a God who hosts us.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think to be a Christian is to be like our God, mm-hmm. which means we have to be. I mean, hospitality, I love what he said, that hospitality was just oozing out of them mm-hmm. rather than it was something that they had to produce.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that good? I got so excited because I really feel like this is a godly thing that we're talking about.
It is.
This is not just some like, oh, how to make your house cute mm-hmm. so that we can be nice.
Mm-hmm.
We are literally acting like Jesus
yeah.
when we host our friends, mm-hmm. our families, especially the stranger.
Yeah, because you're always thinking about the other. Mm-hmm. Like when you're creating your space, you're creating it with the thought that someone will be there. Like with your guest room, like you place the bed there, and even if no one is there at the moment, you're like, someone's gonna be there and someone's gonna find rest there.
Yeah, and it's different yeah. than like hosting somewhere else. Like it's different. Like mm-hmm. if I said, like, say I was getting to know Nixon, and I was like, hey, I like to host a party for you,
mm-hmm.
or I'd like to get to know you. Let's meet at a cafe,
mm-hmm.
right? That's one thing. That's nice, right? I initiated whatnot. But it's another thing to have them in your home.
Mm-hmm.
It's an invitation for intimacy.
Yeah.
It's a way of saying you and I are equal
mm-hmm.
and I want to get to know you as a person.
Mm-hmm.
There's no utility involved in this. You get what I'm saying? It's like it's presence on presence.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why hospitality is such a godly ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that's the hardest.
It is.
It is yeah. the hardest. Think it about it. It is
the hardest, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Not just because we have family and kids and stuff like that. It is hard to extend yourself this way.
It is.
Even in the book of Acts, the first leaders that were picked, the first leaders that were assigned a role, an official role of leadership in the church were the deacons.
Mm.
And deacons, their main job was to wait tables.
Mm.
Their main job was to serve and host those that came for food.
Yeah.
And so you think about leadership in that context. Our Jesus, he knelt down, washed the feet of his mm-hmm. disciples. And then the first leaders that were picked in the church or recognized as people filled with the Spirit mm-hmm. were people who waited tables, basically.
Yeah.
And so we flipped yeah. it upside down. We say leader is someone who can speak well.
Yeah.
Someone who has like 10,000 followers, right? Yeah. And someone who's really good looking, like PB. Like mm-hmm. that's the criteria for leadership.
It is, yeah.
Right? But in the Bible, it's hosting.
That kind of reminds me of this time, like, you know, how powerful would it be if Christians were known for their hospitality?
Ooh.
Like, have you, so I went to the Women's March back in like, I don't even remember, like 2019, and the Sikhs were there giving out free vegan food.
Wow.
Just, and they gave it with like biodegradable mm. bowls and like biodegradable utensils. And there were no, like, they didn't ask for donations. They didn't ask for anything. They just were out there giving out food for yeah. the women at the Women's March. And when I asked them about it, they're like, this is just what we do. It's part of our faith
yeah.
to be here and to feed you no matter what. And I don't know what their beliefs are in regards to, like, you know, feminism or whatever, but right. but they were there and yeah. in all their, like, their beautiful headdress and everything. And that has stuck out to me so much. But how beautiful would it be if we as Christ followers did the same, mm-hmm. you know, instead of being known for our ideological rootedness
yeah.
Or maybe even like yeah. stubbornness. What if we were first invitational
yeah.
and then yes. we're like, let's talk about it. And that's what's so beautiful about your story too with Kells in the beginning is like,
yeah.
let's just, you know, figure it out together.
Yeah, yes. So I think
together. Yeah.
I think that was the big thing. Like it provided the invitation being hospitable, Echo in particular being hospitable. Like you worry less about like the details
mm-hmm.
and in time, like you discover like what it means to be a Christian. It's just mm-hmm. not like having answers to every question. It's more of like a all encompassing thing. Like,
yeah.
what do we do together? Like, how yeah. do we treat each other? What are our shared values?
Mm-hmm.
And that yeah. only is exposed through time. Like you can't go to like your first service and be like, okay, like I have all the answers. Like yes. This is my place. It's like a steady trust building experience.
Yeah.
How did you go from being just hospitable to friends and family then to things like safe family? And if you can even explain what safe family is for our listeners.
We made an orphan month at Echo where we had like guest speakers come every Sunday.
Yeah.
And I remember after one Sunday, I forget if it was a pastor or someone who did safe families, but someone had recommended a book, Orphan Justice. You remember that? And you know me me being back then, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna get everything, I'm gonna do everything. So we bought this book, and sure enough, it ended up like on my bookshelf, and like never read it. But then, fast forward, I think a year.
Yeah.
Me and Kel were at some coffee shop in Costa Mesa studying for I think the bar or finals, and she grabbed the book, but just really nonchalantly, just no, I'm just gonna take it, just in between, I'm gonna read it.
Oh.
So we're at this coffee shop, and I'm studying. I look up across the table, and she's just like full tears. And I'm like, oh, here it comes. She's gonna break up with me.
I'm so sad. No.
I'm like, did PB give another message? Like last week?
Wow.
Anyway, so I'm like, oh, hey, I'm like, what's going on? And she's like, I can't put this book down. Yeah, she was completely rocked, right? And I was like, come on, like. You're halfway through the book even, and you haven't finished it, right? And my wife's she cries, but she's not like a crier.
Uh-huh.
Like she's not one of those where she'll see like a butterfly like landing it's not like that type of so I knew that it had to have been something, right? So she's like, I don't know, just read the book. And I think like halfway through, like page 40 to 60 or something like that, I remember feeling like I was also crying. So here we are, me and Kel, like at this the coffee shop, just like crying. Like,
people walking by going, damn, that's
like, what is going on with you? Yeah, I know.
Bad breakup.
I know. That's when it started to like, the seed was planted where we're like, oh, like, do we want to adopt one day?
Wow.
Like, do we have that heart, right?
Wow.
But we weren't sure. I'm still not sure. Mm. But that definitely did pique our interest, you know? And I believe we talked to people about it, but it wasn't, we didn't have any dreams or anything like that. But a couple months later, we randomly get a call from Kathy Kim, the original OG MJI director, right?
Uh-huh.
Amazing
MJI leader. MJI is the Mary and Joseph initiative that we started to deal with the whole orphan issue. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she randomly emails us. She's like, hey, would you like to participate? And we couldn't have said yes quicker because we felt like it was such a natural, like, yes.
Wow.
We literally had this whole experience. Like, we want to know more. We want to learn. And through MJI, over the course of a year or so, we got partnered up with Olive Crest.
Wow.
And then through Olive Crest, they have a program called Safe Families.
Yes.
Okay.
And we're like, dude, like, we just got married. We have the space. Like, this makes the most sense for what we can give right now.
Yeah.
Like, we can't adopt yet, but we can definitely, like, host.
We can,
you know, have that extra space downstairs. We were in an apartment back then, like, you know, make it into a suitable space for hostings and stuff, like short hostings. And, you know, we signed up, and over the years, it just became more, like I was saying before, it's like, it's crazy thinking back on it. It just made more and more sense.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't me no longer like chasing like a thing, like, oh, I'll do everything. This is our thing. Like, we're cool. Like, this is what we can do. And I think we can do well.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
PB's also a rock star. Him and his family do say families quite often.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the process is you sign up. Once you're approved, you get added onto this, through text updates. And every once in a while they'll text you like, hey, there's like a baby that needs a hosting for X amount of days. This is like their background. This is like the type of hosting we need. And you just decide if it's something that you can do, you just green light it. But if it's something that you can't, you know, you just don't do it. But but you'll get them every few days, every couple of weeks. And once you agree to it, you set up a time and place to go pick up the kids.
Yes.
You go pick them up, and then you just keep them for however long you can do. And at any point, if it becomes too much or whatever, like, you just let them know.
There are all of Crest, the adoption, Christian adoption agency, they found that, like, obviously the best
parent for the child is the biological parent, mm-hmm. if it's safe,
if it's possible,
and if possible, yeah. right? And so they found that a lot of these parents were losing their children to child services because of things like, for instance,
hardship,
or like
if they just can't take care of them for like a week or two, like they have to step in, take the kid, and once they fall into the system, it's very hard for the parent to get back, especially these low income, you know, families who don't have any, you know, language barriers,
or like think about a mom who's wanting to get recovery from drug addiction. Mm-hmm. She has to commit to months of this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then if she does, who's going to watch her kid?
Yeah. Right.
So they're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
And so what they found was that safe families is like a very preventive.
It is. It's a preventative measure.
That if you host, they may not need to be hosted later.
Mm.
You know what I mean? That's the beauty of it, is to help families stay together.
Yeah.
It's really why I love that ministry.
Yeah. So that's what you were talking about, the difference between babysitting and the safe families. Yeah. Because, you know, these families too, it takes like they're very desperate, like to be entrusting your kids to some random strangers, right? Yeah. To take care of the kids for X amount of time.
Yeah.
Like we've had hostings as, you know, long as like 15 days, like 10 days at a time. And like, you don't know these families and stuff, and so it's a very, very, I think, very important service that we can provide, because
I can't imagine being the parent though, you know what I mean, like sending your kids to perfect strangers, no matter how kind they look, like the amount of stress and desperation that they must be in to trust their kid. So I mean, we have some parents, some moms who want to stay in touch during that time, and so we'll FaceTime. And then there's some moms who can't. Literally doesn't have the time or a phone or anything to be able to stay in touch. I can't imagine them missing their kids every night.
Yeah.
And the most heartbreaking for me is like the first few nights is when the child starts crying, realizing that mommy or daddy is not going to be around.
Yeah.
It's so heartbreaking. But at the same time, it's like, this is the best thing for you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell us how it impacted your family now. Now that you did it with Kelly, but then you had kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I think recently you guys hosted a long one too, right? With a sibling?
Yeah.
Tell us about that. Like, what do your kids say? Or at least Kay? And, you know, how does it impact your family?
Yeah. It's so funny because we've been doing this since Kay was 18 months.
Wow.
But it's funny because she kind of remembers what it entailed, you know? So we even like asked her about like, hey, we're going to do a hosting. Like she kind of like, she wasn't surprised. She kind of like knew what was happening. But the impact is like, it's amazing. I'm just so impressed at how like, she can comprehend what's going on, because I remember the first day we brought Jalen and Nadia home, and it was like a 10-day hosting.
Okay. So you're committed to 10 days for this one, okay?
Yeah. You know, she, right when they walked through the door, she was just like, already her interest is so piqued. Like, you know, she just opened up her whole treasure chest of toys and just and she can get possessive with her little brother, but with these two kids that we brought in, she was just like, touch everything, take everything, and she's hugging them and like climbing all over them within like hours. And through that week, like, she just, you know, we would have to send her to daycare in the morning and stuff, and she would be like, oh, can I just stay home with them, can I just spend time with them? It's like one of the most gratifying things about doing it is like my daughter is challenging like us to stay committed, like
to do it
because even the times when we're like, you know, it was hard, like she makes it seem so easy. This kid, this 4-year-old, is such a reminder to us, like, you know, her heart has been stretched, and like she's so, I don't know, like, it for her, it's just so innocent, right? Like, we're just taking care of them and stuff. And so we kept them for the 10 days. I have to brag about my daughter one more time,
because
at the end of the hosting, 10 days, we were preparing to say our goodbyes, you know? And I remember we were kind of telling the kids, and we were in our living room, and we were like, we should pray for them, right? Mm-hmm. So we huddled up together, And I started praying, and halfway through, I just lost words. Like, I had nothing. Like, I was like, just thinking about what I was going to say. Mm. To me, I was like, what should I pray for? Like, it was so hard. For some reason, it was such like a difficult prayer for me. And I just feel like, just kind of from the peripheral, like, you know, my peripheral vision, I see her reaching out. Like, she goes, I'll pray. And so she steps in and she goes, dear God, I remember it. I wish it was like, she goes, dear God, when they first came, I was so scared and nervous, but now I love them. Mm. And I want them to know, like, after they leave, that God loves them. Mm. And no matter where they are, like, he'll take care of them. Mm. And then she turned to the, and these kids are older than her. They're like 9 and 11 or 9 and 11. And she like looks at like the Nani, the girl, and she goes, I know it's sad, but it's going to be okay.
Mm. Wow.
And it's, I mean, what do you say? Like, I know we didn't prepare for that thing, that moment. We didn't say anything to her. We, you know, and her dad over here is fumbling over words and stuff. And she just had the perfect thing to say to these kids, that parting night. And so, I mean, if that's a testament to anything, if it's worth it or not, like, that was worth it for us, that's like, so the whole beautiful 10 days.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm just excited to expose my kids to that type of life, because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't something that I was familiar with growing up, you know.
Wow.
And so,
hearing that, feel like the term generational blessing just feels so real. Like, and it's interesting how you are, like, you know, almost as a third person watching this happen with your daughter, but as people witnessing this, I can almost see, like, just this, the generational blessing just, like, flowing through your family and trickling, not even trickling down to your daughter, but just, like, pouring deeply into her. And I feel like this, there's two things I kind of want to touch on. One is, like, your family story. So maybe we can go on that, and then I can ask my follow-up question. So, you know, you kind of talked a bit about your upbringing as well. Can you share about your family story and what that was like?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so my parents were coming off, when they were younger, coming off the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. Mm. And so where they were, it was just, there's no opportunity. You know, people being run out of their homes and stuff. And, you know, they were refugees, so they ended up, like, on my dad's side, ended up in Malaysia to get out of Vietnam. So they were posted up in Malaysia for a time. My mom was, I forget where. But in particular, my dad's side of the family, when they were over there, I forget how it happened, but someone had reached out and they wanted to sponsor a bunch of refugees to the States. Mm-hmm. And so my dad penned a letter to the people that were running this program or whatever it was. I'm really foggy on the details of, like, what it was, but he penned a letter, and then this Jewish family, this synagogue out in LA, all their members had, you know, pulled together money and resources, and they chose, I think, 23 families to sponsor to the States.
Wow.
So my dad, I don't know, so he just writes this letter, and him and his two brothers are sponsored here by just some, you know, just some Jews out in LA, who felt like this is, they're all, like, their duty, right? So they bring them out, they set them up with apartments, clothes, food.
Oh my gosh.
They set them up with the whole nine.
Yeah.
And through that, my dad was able to then, like, start his life and then sponsor some of our other family members over. Wow. And so I think 80% of our family is, like, here now because of what that group of people did. And in my later years, once I got a little older, I did meet up and contact one of the people that did it. His name is Mitchell Edgar. She's a criminal defense attorney out in LA.
Wow.
And, like, I just kind of asked them about, like, why, like, what compelled them
to meet him.
Oh yeah, so I'm in a relationship with him. Like, I'll talk to him from here and there, and he's like so proud of us. Like, it's just he's like this old man now, right?
Yeah.
This, like, he's this criminal defense attorney in his heyday, and he was like this, like, like this dog of an attorney, right? And he's just such a sweet old guy, and he always talks so fondly about our families, and so we update him all the time. We try to keep in touch, but kind of just ask him about like why. But it was that. It was like we saw a need. We felt called to, like we had to do this.
Yes.
And with whatever we had, some people had factories, some people had businesses. They would put them in, you know, the refugees into jobs and stuff. And get so whatever they had, they just pulled together and and brought us over. So that's
That's beautiful, isn't it?
So beautiful. I mean, I think that statement is like whatever we had, we just did that. And that's sort of a statement that I feel like you've kind of echoed even in the beginning of this podcast. It was like there is a beauty and intention in having this forethought for this other person, but there's also this element of like, this is what I have and this is what I'm gonna bring.
Yes. We're concerned because our first home here in Fullerton is really small, and we did not have extra room. But say family was like, no, your home is nice enough, it's perfect, and we're like, where would the kids sleep? I remember Monty.
Yeah.
I remember him saying, all they need is a couch.
Yep.
And, you know, we weren't going to put the kid on the couch, but we were thinking, gosh, that's all they need? Because these kids sometimes come with nothing. They don't have shoes sometimes.
Oh, my gosh, nothing.
And so when we heard that, when I look in the past, like, I forget how many we've done, but half of them were done at that house. Right? And we just had the kids sleep in the same room, you know, you make do.
Yeah. It's because, you know, it just reminds me, like, so Cal actually went to go pick up Jalen and Nadia this most recent time. And they were maybe 20 minutes down the road from us in Ontario. And she goes and, you know, to pick them up. And, you know, I ask her, like, oh, what was it like? Like, where were they living? And they were, like, staying in this this motel. And it's like the type of motel where, like, you know, you watch like these shows, like where the serial killer has to find like a motel on the side of the road and there's like roach infested. Yes. Like, this is what they were living in, day to day, day in and day out. They didn't have hot water, you know, they didn't have a fridge, so they couldn't buy. So they were eating like, you know, just processed foods all the time. They had one bed, so like the kids would have to sleep on like the hard floor, or like whatever, they would have to change around and stuff. And we picked them up and they come into our house, and the first thing like the kids go is like, they were like, they looked in our bathroom and like, oh my gosh, you guys have more than one light bulb. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, that's not something I even think about, right? Or they're like, oh, do you have hot water? And we're like, yeah, we have hot water. And they're like, I can't wait to take a bath. Or like, like they were just so impressed, but with whatever. And Kel just said to me, like, we might be living like, you know, 20 minutes away, but it's like different universes. So even when we don't think that we have enough, it's like so much to these kids. Like, they just need like a roof. They just need like just a place, a safe space to stay. And so, yeah, like to anybody who's like wondering if safe families is for them, like, you can be in a trailer, like, you can be in your car, like, I mean, maybe not as far as your car, but you don't have to have a lot, is what I'm saying.
You know, it reminds me, Nixon, like, you know, our mission in our church is belong and become. And I think if you, especially those of you that attend Echo and those of you that are Christians listening, I think that's our primary call. Like, we're so used to the success metric of Christianity being like going places and conquering.
Yeah.
Right? A very like colonial feel to it, right? Colonizing, you know? But if you think about it, what if we, like you were saying earlier, instead of our doctrines and our like fine points of why you're not included, what if we were known for what we do in terms of versus what we don't do or who we don't allow in, right? Well, what if we were like known for who we allowed in, who we touched, like Jesus, who Jesus was like accused of always eating with the wrong type of people, right? What if we were always eating with the wrong type of people?
Exactly.
Right? And we were known for that. And I'm telling you, folks that are like, I found the secret to children's ministry success, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's not more programs. It's not a great speaker. It's not getting a youth or children's band. It's not getting an Christian entertainment. It's families hosting or living out the gospel. Mm-hmm. And your children, like Kay, will be inspired by that. Oh. I'm telling you, they'll grow up. They might not be able to recite every verse. Mm-hmm. They might not be able to recite all the tenets of our faith, but they'll be able to teach others how to live for Jesus.
Yeah.
Because they'll be doing it. It's natural for them. Mm-hmm. Christ followers open doors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, that's really cool.
I think, Nixon, listening to your story, and it's so interesting because you're an attorney, you are established in your career. Mm-hmm. So you kind of are like the American dream in a sense that your parents like sought out for. But the image I keep getting is that like a lot of the times we make it and then we don't open the door for the person behind us. But I think in your story, like, it's so beautiful to see how the synagogue like opened its doors for your family. And then and then you became, you know, an attorney yourself. Mm-hmm. And then it's like you remembered to look back and see like, oh wait, I still want to keep this door open and, mm-hmm. and create that space. And we see it so beautifully in your daughter and your son when he starts talking to you. That prayer that Kaylin said is just like ringing in my spirit of like, I was scared at first, but now I love you. And mm-hmm. like, how crazy would that be if that was our posture too? It's like,
yeah, someday in the future, I mean, hopefully, God willing, mm-hmm. if Nixon doesn't go away further than Corona, I'm going to see Kay when she's older.
Yeah.
And I'm going to know that our church was a success. Mm. Not when Kay goes, Pastor Brian, I'm going to seminary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, God bless her if she does, if she needs to, right? If God called her to be a pastor, good luck, right? But to me, it's a success if she says, Pastor Brian, I've made room for others.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like my dad, we my husband and I have this awesome bedroom or awesome. Mm-hmm. Their success is turning into significance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how I know Echo has succeeded.
Yeah.
And we're constantly making room for others.
Yeah.
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 And the other thing that I wanted to bring up and highlight maybe as we close was like, you know, Nixon, when you were sharing too, you're like, there was also a part of you that was like, I didn't know I was good at this. And people kept bringing that up. And I think that's sort of what's beautiful about being part of a community is recognizing the light that's in someone else. And, and you know, there's an aspect of like, what's inherent, what's part of your DNA, but also like what you like and maybe what you don't know that you like, and having good friends who are like, hey, you're really good at this, and kind of building your confidence in that as well. So I wanted to highlight that because anyone who's listening might be like, I don't really know what I'm good at. Like, what do I have to offer? Mm-hmm. And I guess my encouragement would be to anyone who's listening is like, you know, what are your lows and your fish, and maybe like ask your friends like what do they see in you too? Because maybe it's not like having an extra home or being excellent in providing a safe space. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's like, I don't know, baking cookies. I know so many people who show love that way in our church too.
Yeah.
That's really good.
I want to say too, it's like saying, like, it's like just saying yes to like the little things, because exactly kind of what you were touching base on, where it's like, you might not know that this thing that you like or you love or you have like a inkling for, it might seem so insignificant in that season at that time. Like when you're 20, when I'm 20, I'm like, yeah, like, you know, preparing meals for people or like providing space for people, but I'm like, that's never going to be like important. Like, you know, what's important is like graduating and getting the degree and whatever, establishing yourself. And then, you know, along the way, you keep kind of stoking that fire and kind of doing it. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes something, because like now, like, it's like, I'm wondering like how I can make this more of like a significance thing, kind of what you were kind of leading into.
Yeah.
Which is now like, how do I use this thing that I feel like passionate about or like that I care about into something else? And saying yes to that kind of led to like MJI, kind of led to, you know, say families, and hopefully down the line it'll be even more clear as to what like the full picture of I guess like our calling as a family is going to be.
Yeah.
But it's kind of just not rushing to the finish line.
Yeah.
But that reminds me of what he said earlier about his woodworking. How I love what you said. How you gotta say that again. How you said woodworking is basically the process of failing.
What did you say? So before we were kind of talking about what COVID, the quarantine year was like for me, and one of the things that I randomly picked up was woodworking, and I would call myself like a beginner or amateur. Like, you know, I'm not very good at it or anything, but I found a huge passion for it. One of the biggest things that came out of quarantine for me was I really started doing therapy. And what I gathered from therapy was the reason why I sought it was because I was having a lot of anxiety with like with work and career and stuff. And I was just like having these meltdowns. And so through therapy, what I gathered was growing up in that Asian seeking success, you know, paradigm that you were alluding to before, it was, you know, my parents always were like, succeed. But there was never any emphasis or importance put on failing. So I've always just kind of done what was comfortable within my ability, and like I didn't venture outside of what was a almost like an step. Like I just figured out like how to be a student my whole life.
Wow.
And so I got good at that. And so I never strayed far from it. I never like experimented with things, right? And so I never submitted myself to failure. And so now as an adult, I'm an attorney, like, man, I'm failing all the time. You know, it's like you fail all the time. And it gives me so much anxiety, and to the point where I'm like, oh, I don't know if this is for me. And so I randomly picked up woodworking, just a couple power tools around the house, and started building things. And it was so, what's the word, redemptive for me. Because, like, it was addicting, because every project, it was just my cut is off. Or this joining technique is not right. Or I did this completely wrong. And the next project, I'll learn from the last. And so through like 5 or 6 to 10 to 15 little projects, I felt all this confidence in like, this is what I need to teach my kids. This is what I need to rewrite my whole life with, which is failing and being okay with failing and enjoying the failing, because it leads to, you know, it leads to knowledge. It leads to improvement. And, you know, it was that for me that whole last year.
I wanted to talk about that, Heidi, before we end today, because like you said, not everyone has the same tool set as Nixon, but all of us are called to apprentice Christ. Right? Nice. And all of us are called to
metaphor.
We're better, a carpenter, and you know what I'm saying? But what I love about his story is like, just like his journey to being hospitable was marked by many failures or even many mistakes here and there, and kind of fine tuning and honing and realizing how they can be a gift to God's world. He's learning that now with everything in life through this metaphor of like woodworking. And I feel like that's a gift to us as a body listening right now, that you're not called to be perfect. You're called to present your bodies as a living sacrifice. You're called to give God a gift. Right? And that gift is constantly worked at. You know, I hear all the time people saying like, what do you think God's called me to? And I'm like, I don't know. In my eyes, you suck at a lot of things, right? No, I'm just kidding. I don't know what you're called to, but I want to change the narrative. Instead of constantly looking for what did God call me to do, so that I can just respond to that in perfection, I guess, in a perfect way, which is
impossible.
What if your life was a gift to God? What if you can make something for him?
It's true.
Right? You can make a
room. What do you have?
What do you have? You can make space. You can make time for what God cares about. You can make something of this wood, of this space, of this house, of this career. Make something for God. But the beauty of making something, is the mistakes, is what went into it. That's the gift to God, that you tried. Isn't that the gift? Like, when my kids give me their drawings, right, for my birthday, I don't go, this is ugly. This is not perfect. And did you do it in your first try?
Yeah.
Because if you did it, then that means you made mistakes. No. Yeah. I know. I can see the eraser marks. Mm. I can see them trying and trying to express something to me.
Yeah.
And then when it gets to me in that card, and it doesn't even fit in the envelope because it's so big. And then I open it up and I see what they drew or painted for me. I'm like, this, the intention. And the journey that went into expressing this, that's the gift.
Yeah.
That's what I take pleasure in.
Yeah.
Right? And so I want you guys that are listening to be encouraged that you're called to move God's heart in this way. And what moves him is your intentionality.
Yeah.
That you're making room, you're making time, you're learning new skills, you're trying your best to say, God, I love you. Mm. I want to go beyond success and stability. I want my life to be meaningful. Yeah. I want it to be a gift to God and to others.
Yeah. And what I love about Nixon's language too is like, I'm still figuring it out. Or like, this is what I found to be life-giving, or this is what I found to have enjoyed. And I think we live in such a like expert kind of like lifestyle. We see just the polished parts, and it's scary to venture into places that we don't know, because we're like, well, what if I'm not good at it? And it's like, well, you're not going to be good at it. You're just going to figure it out. And I love that. It's like really looking around and seeing like, oh, like I like this, and admitting that you like it and have an interest in it, you know.
you had a lot of conversations with Monty, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know,
just, not as much as you, but yes.
Just showing up is something.
And
so I remember one of his little anecdotes that he gave during his pitches was when he was a little kid, he was at a little like, you know, like baseball game, and he was in the stands. It was a championship game, and there was two teams, but one of the teams didn't have enough players. So they just asked, "Hey, is anybody out there? Can someone just play?"
No,
Monty
way.
Goes, I'll be down to play. So they give him a mitt, and he goes to the coach. He goes, oh, but like, what if I'm not good enough? And he looks at him, he says, you just being here is enough, because now we can all play and we can all have a chance, you know? And that always stuck with me, just showing up, you know what I mean?
I literally got goosebumps.
Show up.
Monty's a smart guy.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
But that always stuck with me. So I think,
Dang. Wow. Well, thank you for sharing your story, Nixon. I hope.
Show up.
Show up. Use what you have. You know, we use the language passionate, but it's really like, what brings you joy, and what has God gifted in you, in your tool set?
What do you want to make?
What do you want to make? Is it the macaroni that's in your pantry? Is it, you know, just really anything? What has God gifted you? And you and Kelly are such a beautiful.
Thank you guys.
So we're just so glad to have shared this space with you.
Thank you for coming all the way here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Corona.
I'm just glad I had a reason to put on pants today.
he's from the Rona, guys.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
It's so much fun.
Love you guys. Bye.
Bye. I'm gonna do it.